Blog Talk Radio.
You walk into this room at your own risk, because it leads to the future. Not a future that will be, but one that might be. It has refinements, technological advances, and a more sophisticated approach to the destruction of human freedom. But like every one of the super states that preceded it, it has one iron rule. Logic is an enemy and truth is a menace. This is Mr. Romney Wordsworth. He's a citizen of the state, but will soon have to be eliminated.
Wordsworth, Romney, field investigation finding obsolescence. Do you know why you're here, Mr. Wordsworth?
Yes, sir.
I'd ask you to speak up a little, if you will.
Yes, sir, I know why I'm here.
You've been under investigation, Mr. Wordsworth, for the mandatory period of 1 year and 11 months. You're found to be obsolete. The purpose of this hearing is to make a finding in the matter and make a sentence accordingly. Do you understand that?
I understand that.
Your occupation, Mr. Wordsworth?
A librarian.
A what?
A librarian, sir.
I'm told you've had counsel and been given orientation, Mr. Wordsworth, but I'm still not sure in my own mind that you understand the purpose of this hearing. The field investigators in your sector have classified you as obsolete. This finding carries with it serious implications. Do you understand that, Mr. Wordsworth? Now, I ask you again your occupation.
I am a librarian. That is my occupation. That is my profession. If you people choose to call that obsolete...
Request clarification of the term?
Yes, the term, Mr. Wordsworth, you people, you make reference to the state?
I make reference to the state.
And you persist in declaring your occupation as being that of a librarian, is that correct?
That is correct.
Having to do with books.
Yes, sir? Books.
But there is very little call for the services of a librarian. Case in point, a minister... A minister would tell us that his function is that of preaching the word of God. And of course it follows that since the state has proven that there is no God, that would make the function of a minister somewhat academic as well.
There is a God.
You are in error, Mr. Wordsworth. There is no God.
The state has proven that there is no God.
You cannot erase God with an edict.
You are obsolete, Mr. Wordsworth. You have no function, Mr. Wordsworth. You're an anachronism, like a ghost from another time.
I am nothing more than a reminder to you that you cannot destroy truth.
You're a bug, Mr. Wordsworth, a crawling insect. An ugly, misformed little creature who has no purpose here, no meaning.
I am a human being. I exist. And if I speak one thought aloud, that thought lives, even after I'm shoveled into my grave.
Delusions, Mr. Wordsworth. Delusions. The Bible, poetry, essays, all kind, all of it, an opiate to make you think you have a strength when you have no strength at all. You have nothing but spindly limbs and a dream, and the state has no use for your kind.
You waste our time, Mr. Wordsworth, and you're not worth the waste.
All right, everybody. It's Monday night. This is the Constitution Hour, back from a much-needed vacation. And I see that I have Mr. Robert Wordsworth Kaplan holding on the line. I'm going to make him hold for just a little bit longer. But I do love and respect you, Mr. Robert, and all my listeners. I've got FT and Miss Linda, Sandy, nice to see you here, Miss Yola, and we'll have others, I'm sure. If not, it's not a big deal. You know, I thought that clip was appropriate. I was saying earlier that I really just didn't have the time. I'm not able at work to do what I'd like to do for the show in preparation. I really want to put together a montage with the chorus or refrain from the Simon and Garfunkel song, The Boxer. For those of you that remember the song, the refrain or the chorus is lie, la, lie. Lie, la, lie, 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 la, lie, lie, la, lie. And I just thought that would fit quite beautifully with statements from several of our past POTUSes, as well as our current POTUS, the liar and thief. I mean, chief. Because after all, isn't that what they do? Isn't that what they do, folks? And don't, let's not deem just one president here a liar. Yes, Barack Obama lied. So did Bill Clinton. So did George Bush. So did Poppy Bush. So did Ronald Reagan. So did Jimmy Carter. And I would scarcely ask you to tell me one that hasn't lied to you or to the people in some way or another. And there are lies of outright false, knowingly false statements. And then there are lies of omission, lies of convenience. And that clip that I just played there is a fantastic old clip. That was Charlton Heston and Burgess Meredith in that clip. But how appropriate is that to today, that one clip? My God, it's more realistic now than it ever was before. And everyone is running around with their butts on fire or their hair on fire talking about the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare. And of course, the run-up to Obamacare saw many, 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 many politicians come out. Some told the truth, and some lied, trying to diminish or derail Obamacare. It's not above the other side of the aisle to make up lies, half-truths, and just shrill rhetoric if they think it serves their purpose. But I think it's ironic, as we sit here today, watching what has to be the most uncomfortable dance these idiots are doing right now. They're trying to not sell you, okay? Make no mistake, ladies and gentlemen, when you hear Barack Obama, Nancy Pelosi, and the rest of these gas bags get up there, they're trying to convince themselves that it's not a lie, because they know the truth, but they have to believe the lie in order to sell it to you. And it's just, to me, quite enlightening, and in some cases very infuriating, to see the myriad of people, and I'm not talking about just politicians, my God, the media talking heads just absolutely refuse, outright refuse to admit they have been lied to. It's just a bunch of garbage. And quite honestly, in the end, I have to tell myself, what does it really matter? And Sandy and Linda, you're absolutely right. This is not a representative government, nor has it ever been a representative government. Let me take that back. Let me back up and rewind that statement. It has always been a representative government. It's just a question of who is being represented. I don't believe that it ever was, Linda. I don't believe that it ever was. I believe that it was touted as such, but I don't believe that it ever was truly a representative government representing the people, the human beings, the flesh and blood, living, breathing, sentient beings created by God, representatives. Don't believe that for a moment. You go back and read your history again. While it was curtailed early on, it was under daily assault to create this federalist system that the likes of Hamilton and others envisioned. My God, the Alien and Sedition Act. Do we need to go any further? It should have been clamped down right then and there. Anybody know when that act was passed into law? The Alien and Sedition Act? Really? How dare you presume to be seditious and speak out against your government in a representative republic? And on that note, I'm going to bring in Mr. Wordsworth Kaplan. Mr. Wordsworth, Robert, how are you, sir?
Well, I guess you could say on one of the 6 billion we got canceled, one of the 5 billion we got canceled.
So you're a librarian then?
I'm a librarian. I'm a special librarian.
Well, I hate to hear that.
Well, I have no health insurance now.
Well,
you know, so I'm on my way out. So what the hell? What do I got to lose? There's more money in my pocket because I'm just going to pay the fine. I ain't going to get to go in now. I'm not going to enroll.
So you're just going to pay the 3% of your income?
I'm going to pay the 3% of my income.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You know, I don't watch a lot of television. And I couldn't even tell you who the guy was. I was flipping channels, and on the on one of the Fox reports, they were talking. They had a guy on, and one of the Democrat pundit talking heads was yakking on about health care, and whoever this guy was, and I wished I'd have caught his name. He cut in and he said, "Look." He said, what you're talking about is health insurance. That's not health care. Health insurance doesn't provide health care. Doctors do. He said, none of this is about health care. We've got the greatest health care system in the world. He said, what you're talking about is controlling and regulating health insurance, which is totally different. And I was like, my God, Eureka. Someone finally said it out loud. Absolutely. Are you kidding me? I've been harping on this for how long?
So but am I, you Ron, see, but no one listens.
Well, it's not the talking point, Robert. It's not one of the talking points. Healthcare is health insurance, and what it is it's trying to get. It's a mind control, for lack of a better term. It's a way of getting you to associate the two as synonymous. Health insurance is health care, and you must have health care. Therefore, you must have health insurance. The way that they try to meld these two together, and my God, it's taken how long? How long ago was it, 2008, that they were talking about this garbage? And just yesterday, the first time I've heard anyone say it out loud on national television, that's health insurance, that's not health care.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know what I'm going to do, Ron. I've been absolutely, let's put it this way. I feel like I've been financially molested. I feel like I've been financially raped.
Well, I think that, you know, a large percentage of the American population feels the same way, Robert. Every individual who works for a living, who owns their own business, who has been forced into this health insurance Ponzi scheme, who's been forced into this income tax Ponzi scheme, who's been forced into the Social Security tax Ponzi scheme, they have been financially raped. Why is it difficult to understand that, you know, we are seeing by the political class and by the corporate class as resources.
You know, Ron, I wrote to Neil Cavuto, and I basically said to him, I got my letter November 9th, last Saturday, about my cancer, and I got so angry, I wrote to Neil Cavuto, and that in November 9th, the policies, the numbers were like 2.5 million or 3.5 million cancellations. Was that November 9th? And I wrote in to Neil and I said, all we need is 2.5 million more people for what, for history to repeat itself. And you all know what I mean by 6 million people, period.
Well, and all jesting aside, because I was going to make a joke and say, well, did you inform him that you had a pre-existing condition? You're Jewish.
Yeah, I'm Jewish. Yeah, right.
But you know what? I don't disagree with you, Robert, in what you're saying, that I see a lot of talk and chatter that's moving that direction. And, you know, the thing is, whether it was Hitler or Stalin or the English or the French, everybody's always looking for a scapegoat of why things aren't going well in their community, in their nation, in their state, in their neighborhood, you know. And this is something that we've heard from Black people. They're a common scapegoat as well. Anyone that can be seen as different or set apart from everyone else, well, then, you know, they're the problem. I was speaking with a friend of mine today, and we were talking about, you know, the Jewish state, or that I shouldn't even say the Jewish state, pardon me, the Zionist state that is Israel and its creation. And, you know, it goes back to the late 1700s, early 1800s, when the World Zionist Organization was first getting its feet under it, and they were trying to repatriate people of Jewish descent back into the Holy Land or the homeland. You know, you move forward into, and of course, that, they claim, is what created the dissent or division between the Palestinians and the Israelis that are there now. And I can understand that. I can understand that.
Everybody's going to get their wish. I mean, Israel's ready to go under, so it's water over the dam.
I don't think Israel's going to go under so easily. And if you guys remember, and if I'd have had time, my God, I wish I could go back and find those emails. I wish I would have saved those emails. But because this goes back some time ago, before Frank had his stroke, and I had gotten an email that was outlining some events that were alleged to be future events in the Middle East. And Frank and I were discussing this email. I sent him a copy of it because I wanted to get his thoughts. And he had the same thought that I did, that the only way that this could be done was if Saudi Arabia and Israel became partners or bedfellows, so to speak. And so we were discussing, how exactly do you go about getting Israel or the Saudis, to side with Israel? And so we ran through a couple of different scenarios, and what are we hearing today? What's going on today? They have got Saudi Arabia siding with Israel. Now, if you know some history of Saudi Arabia and the Muslim Brotherhood, you understand why. Now, we hear all of this chatter, right? Constant chatter back and forth about Israel, the Muslim Brotherhood, Hamas. We hear all these stories. But I don't think people understand that when folks talk about the CIA created the Muslim Brotherhood, That's not a wholly accurate statement, but it is partially accurate. Are you walking through a car wash or skydiving again?
No, actually, I'm just walking outside getting smoked and killing myself with a cigarette.
Oh, you shouldn't do that. But
I don't have to do that.
Egypt was one of the concerns. If you go back to Sir Lawrence of Arabia, you know, you go and watch that old movie, and it takes on a new meaning. For me, it was always just a movie, and it, you know, I didn't know anything about the history. But the British are the ones that organized. T.E. Lewis is the one that organized the Arabs, the mainly Saudis, the Muslim Arabs. The British are the ones that gave the loan to start the Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Brotherhood got ran out of Egypt by Nasser. The United States CIA was afraid that the Muslims of Egypt were going to go commie, which communism and Islam do not jive. Not even close. Communism has rules that Islam just can't abide. And so there really never was truly a threat of the communist getting a foothold in the Islamic countries. So anyway, the U.S. picked our champion. We picked Saudi Arabia. And again, that was part of that red line agreement.
Okay,
and so that's why now look, I'm not saying I called it because I wasn't sure what the indications were, the implications were, but I told you guys weeks ago, months ago, that there's more to Obama's statement about this red line than meets the eye. And wouldn't you know, look at what's happening right now in the Middle East. Is anybody paying attention to the fact that the red line is being redrawn, and you have got Saudi Arabia, who has been the largest creator of radical Islam, right, through the universities at Medina and Mecca, and largely because the Muslim Brotherhood found a haven in those universities, and they teach radical Islam, Wahhabism. And you've got a radical shift in the alignment in the Middle East. Egypt has collapsed. The quote-unquote Muslim Brotherhood is out, which I think is a joke. That's going back to the days of Nasser, when they were, and then Nasser was brutal to those guys. He absolutely was. The Saudis tolerated them, and we used that. We used that to create Mujahideen freedom fighters, to stir these people up and use their religion as a tool to foist them out against the evil communist hordes. It's laughable to see what's going on. It's so damn transparent to me. It's absolutely transparent. Meanwhile, you've got the U.S. We've always been saber-rattling against Iran. And who is it that we had an agreement with, the Saudis? Now, wait a minute. We had an agreement with the Saudis, and we own Saudi Arabia. But in as much as we've gotten ourselves into this monetary system debt problem, they own us. They've got us by the short hairs. Well, now you see right on cue, after the whole Syria debacle, Saudi comes out and says that there's a serious rift in the U.S.-Saudi relations, and now come to find out what's-her-name has possibly been over in Iran making secret backdoor deals with them. It's a total realignment.
Oh, sure. It's a realignment, and that's why Kerry is right there trying to push a deal before he leaves. It's just like he's cramming it down like they crammed down Obamacare, you know. And, you know, let him cram it down because Israel won't put up with it. But Israel won't. Bottom line, Ron, Israel won't put up with that crap, you know.
Well, now, and I agree. I don't think they will either. But here's the other side of this. you've got to think about this, okay? We've been told all our lives, Jew and Gentile alike, that the Muslims hate the Jews and that they want to kill all the Jews. We know that 17 of the 19 alleged hijackers were from Saudi Arabia. We know that the universities in Saudi Arabia, Mecca and Medina, have trained the vast majority of the terrorists worldwide. There is no question about it. All it takes is a little bit of research to find that there's truth in that statement. And now you've got a situation where Israel is talking to the main progenitor of terrorists in the Middle East and going to give them weapons, going to supply them with weapons because they're on Israel's side. Now you tell me how in the hell that makes any logical sense whatsoever. Other than the enemy of my enemy is my friend, and they're so terrified over Iran that they'll do anything. But you better watch out for those Saudis, because they're sly. And their whole goal from the very beginning is to create a Wahhabist state.
Well, I don't know, Ron, anymore. All I know is I've never had anything stolen from me that belonged to me in my lifetime. That's all. I never had anything stolen from me in my life. I take that back. I was pickpocketed when I was in Las Vegas. See, that as a man. Besides that debacle in Las Vegas when I was robbed, I've never had anything personally taken, anything away from me, you know? And it's just like, for the past week, I've just been feeling like, you know what? I've been feeling like crap all week long just thinking about it. So I don't know how, I have to regroup. I have to, now I have to rearrange my life now. And just pray and hope for the best, because if I have another stroke without health insurance, I'm done. I'm just basically done.
The government will take care of you, Robert.
Well, you know what? I was thinking about that. And by rights, I should be on disability, but I've been fighting and trying not to, you know. But you know, what do I got to lose now? Might as well apply for disability so I can pay the fine.
You know, speaking of stroke, how is our buddy Frank?
Buddy Frank, I went there this week, and lo and behold, he's out of rehab. He has his own apartment. And I have to call his social service advisor to see where he is, because he's got his own apartment and he graduated, so he's doing fine.
Well, then so we need to get behind back on the radio.
I know. I mean, I got to find where he lives now. That's my next quest.
Because he was certainly lucid and able to communicate when I was down there to see him. The mind's still sharp.
But at least he got out of there. He's out of that rehab place, which is a good thing for him. And he's got his
own place.
So he's doing fine. In fact, Leonie and I went there. What was it? Thursday or Friday of last week. So he was not there. So that's good news.
I might have to reach out to his daughter. I think I've still got her number here somewhere.
I can't find it. I had her number too, but I lost it in the shuffle when I lost my address book, and I can't find that either. So it's like.
I've got it in one of those little, pocket notebooks, and I've got it here somewhere.
he's not in the white pages as of yet, so I guess he doesn't have a home phone. So,
if he's like most, he's just using a cell phone at this point. I mean, why would you do anything else?
Yeah, I know. I'm thinking about disconnecting my home phone, too. I'm tired of it ringing. But at any rate, Ron, this is a big deal here, you know?
As
Joe Biden would say, this is a big effing deal. He was right. That's what he meant by that. That's exactly what he meant by that, Ron.
Robert, and my heart goes out to you and the millions of people that are being affected by this, and I'm sure at some point it's going to affect my health care as well. And, you know, all I can think of when I hear all this talk, what I was thinking of today, is that clip of Alan Grayson, your congressman from down there in Florida.
Yeah, he's not my congressman.
Yeah, him and Wasserman, they represent you, don't they?
Man, those are two of the most craziest people.
But when Grayson went on his little tirade on the House floor, and he had his little easel up there, and he had his cards, and he's like, when they were debating the Obamacare fraud, and he kept saying, what is the Republicans' plan? Well, if you get sick, just die. Just hurry
That's
up
right.
and die. That's, the Republicans want you to just hurry up and die. You remember that? Remember that whole fiasco bunch of... But that's all I could envision today when I was hearing all this news. And, you know, you've got a somewhat prominent Democrat coming out and saying... Of course he lied. We all knew that wasn't true. So there's one honest Democrat in the whole effing bunch who's more or less come out and said, well, you'd have to be an idiot if you believed that we were telling the truth. We all knew it was a lie.
Well, that was his plan in all reality.
And I mean, look at all the people that were demonized for pointing out how terrible this bill or law was or was going to be. And even those people, when Ted Cruz stood up and said, we've got to plant our flag and plant it now, they tucked tail and ran, and they were all wagging their finger at the only man with enough balls to stand up and tell the truth.
Yeah, well, I was watching C-SPAN, you know. I have been sleeping good lately, you know, since I lost my health care plan. And I watched Paul Ryan on C-SPAN, you know, talking to the governor of Iowa, the Republican governor from Iowa. I can't remember his name right now. And he had enough nerve to say, the reason why Romney and I lost was this. We were fighting against the theory of Obama instead of the... Let me get it straight. We were fighting against the theory of the progressive movement, but now we're fighting the practice of progressive movement. And when he said that, I just wanted to go in that TV... tickets, you know what is. Yeah.
Well, you know, and the thing is that these people do not give two craps about you or me or anyone else. And it's well established that they don't need my paycheck. They don't need what little pittance I earn that they rob from me. They can conjure up as much as they'd like. And on that note, I believe we've got Miss Linda from California with us on the line.
Hey, Ron. Hi, Robert. How's everybody?
Hey. I'm hanging in there. How you doing?
We're hanging in there. See, I have Medicare, and they have yet, of course, at this stage, to hike up those premiums, and I know they will. I know that there's not many people in the doctor profession yet, Robert, who have gone into concierge medicine, which is not just for the rich, because some are for the average person as well, where they actually have fee schedules and they refuse to take any and all insurances. And they tell you what your, you know, it's like a menu. And if you have a just an office visit, it's $50. And if you have a procedure, it's ABC. And,
That's what I'm going to do. And now I'm just going to pay them.
Absolutely.
Pay my doctor payments out of pocket. It just, I just worry, God forbid.
Yeah, it's
fee
for services, the way it ought to be.
Absolutely.
My
other problem, and I've said this before, and I know Ron agrees with me, and I think a few others, we should untether this from the government and untether it from employer-based mandates. It's ridiculous. There's no excuse for that.
I
no
think we should untether
it
from the friggin' I'm telling you, if I could be dictator for a day.
I know.
One day. Man, I'm here to tell you. And the sad thing is, I know that it would launch society into a turmoil, but
yeah.
it would be short-lived.
Short-lived.
And there would have to be a way for a transition period. But Robert, you laugh, and I'm dead serious. The first decree I would put out is that insurance is illegal, and anyone caught even attempting to sell or market anything that even resembles an insurance policy goes straight to the gallows.
You know what? There's no reason. This is the problem we have. We're not going back to the fundamentals. Now, you talked about that it may have been a representative republic. Well, you know, maybe when the ink was still drying, it have resembled it because, I mean, why would Ben Franklin say a republic if you can... I mean, why would he say that? Was
correctly.
He evil from...
He knew. He knew
it was
governed by evil little bastards that weren't angels.
Right. They're men, and I get that. So basically, what he was saying to her, and I'm because I've thought about this for a while. He's saying you have to be on top of us constantly. There's no vigilance around here. You know, and we didn't listen to him. Maybe he wasn't explicit, and perhaps that's the problem. You know, because sometimes you have to spoon feed people, even those who get his. I mean, I don't know, but like you say, being the dictator for a day, because I've been doing my Econ 101, and I'm learning. Last week was I'm still working on it. The Federal Reserve and the supply of money. Fractional reserve banking. I've learned so much. It's amazing. It's fantastic. There was a guy on Glenn's show today talking about the Federal Reserve and this quantitative easing. And the guy, I can't remember where he used to work. I think he was smack in the middle of both that portion and or Wall Street. So he was talking to Glenn about all this stuff. And he says if they stopped tomorrow, the whole thing would, you know, there would be a mess.
Oh,
I don't
absolutely.
Even,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And I'll throw another wrench in your works because this will mess with probably everyone listening. We've been taught some things about the progression of economies and the progression of money. And
right.
So what came before money?
Well... production?
Well, but, I mean, before there was money, before there was governments coining money.
Well, you had to have barter because that's, if you didn't have fake currency or Federal Reserve notes or coinage of money, you would have to use barter.
And what came before barter?
I don't know.
Prostitution.
Credit. What the economists call...
That's funny.
what many of the economists call barter is really not accurate. The earliest systems known are in ancient Sumeria. And if you go back to the Sumerian texts, what you'll find is that they had a system that operated solely on credit.
Wow.
And it was credit between you and the government, credit between you and your neighbors. There was no money, per se. They didn't have coins or,
right.
you know, gold bars or silver bars or paper.
Right.
And, you know, it might be that your neighbor has something that you not only want, but that you desperately need, and you
right.
don't have anything that he wants or that he needs. So how do you barter with someone when you don't have anything to offer them? And all money is, when we think about it, or what we
use as money. The medium
of exchange. What we use as money today, or currency, I should say more correctly, is a promise to pay at some point in the future. Well, what the hell is credit?
Right, exactly.
It's the same thing. So long before, right, long before there was hard money, long before there was what we understand as barter, there was actually credit. It was a promise to pay at a future date, a certain amount of time or goods or
sure.
service, you know, and that's, and, you know, it'd be kind of nice to have your neighbor indebted to you. Well, I mean, you think about it. It's a mutually beneficial system in that regard. The problem is, along the way, as we've gotten smarter about money and money mechanics and economics, what they've done is they've taken away the Jubilee.
Sure.
And that was, you know, in the Jewish tradition, it was every 7 years or every 49 years, there was a year of Jubilee where all private debts were forgiven.
That's
right. Well, that makes sense. That makes sense.
And everybody starts new with a clean slate. Now, government debts were not forgiven. But private debts were. And what we're seeing now, we've seen a complete perversion of that.
Sure.
Remember, we talk about that upside-down world, bizarro world. And what we see now is big corporate and big government debt is never absolved. It's always reaffirmed. And the public are the ones that are strapped or saddled with it. You look at the Revolutionary War and the Constitution and the treaty that came after the end of the Revolutionary War, was it anything other than a reaffirmation of the debt owed to England?
Right. I know. It's sick. It should have been.
And then again in the 14th Amendment, we see another reaffirmation of the debt.
Yeah. You know what I've been reading wrong? I've been reading Timothy. Timothy is a great chapter in the Bible.
I think they're all great chapters. Leviticus
they
is
are.
A bit of a tough read, but
yeah, but I know. If you read chapter, you know, but I saw this preacher the other night, this past Sunday, and he was reading, like, I think it was reading Timothy chapter 6, and he was talking about percentages. It makes sense, he was explaining how the story about, you know, giving, you know, the percentages of giving, and
well,
you know, let me tell the story real quick.
Sure.
This poor lady had two copper coins. And all the Jews were putting all the money in, like thousands of dollars. And so Jesus says to the people that the lady's two copper coins are more worth than what all the money that they all put into the bucket.
Absolutely, because she was giving everything she had, and they were giving up just what they were willing to part with.
Yeah, that was a great story. I mean, that's...
Absolutely.
My dad,
God rest him, used to get very animated talking about tithing. And he said, you go back and you read the Bible where it talks about tithing. And he said, you know, everyone talks about 10%. 10%, 10%. He said, that's not what it says. He says it's 10% of your first fruits of your increase.
Right.
That means 10% of your profit. After all your bills are paid and everything's handled, and you have no more debts, you're the 10% of the profit, your disposable income, that's, and that's not trying to make excuses for tithing more or less. That's just what it says. You know, we hear things about, you know, taking the Lord's name in vain.
Right.
And I know you know Robert being raised at least partly in a Jewish home, not necessarily just all Catholic, but I know that you understand that the Hebrews, the Jews, would not speak the name of God. They might call him another name like Adonai.
Out of the way.
But they do. Right. But there's one name of God that's written in the Torah. They will not speak it. And the reason they won't speak it is because that's invoking the name of God, the holy name of, without purpose. And that is taking the Lord's name in vain, without cause. And I think a lot of people don't understand that.
I know. But the point I was trying to make, if he was trying to tie in the percentages to the government, if the government just would take percentages, that's how they would balance the budget. And no one, that was just a red light. Just it says, wow, what a concept. You know, what a concept. Percentages.
Well, and we've had this discussion about budgets before. It's really simple for the government to balance the budget. It doesn't take any effort whatsoever. But it also, if everyone understood that it was really a simplistic act, then, all of this debate and hand-wringing wouldn't get anywhere. And to me, as I sit and watch all of this unfold, and it's very unfortunate, and my heart goes out to people like you and all the others that are being very negative impacted by this latest round of nonsense.
You know how I look at it, Ron?
I think with all of the tools we have at our disposal, with the internet and all the communications possibilities we have, I think we've been wasting a lot of time. I think we've been spinning a lot of wheels, tilting at windmills. And what we should be doing is reinforcing the idea of questioning the authority. Where does this authority come from?
Right.
And much like that clip at the beginning of the show where he says, you people, and he says, clarification. Yes, we need a clarification. Define you people. Do you mean the state? Well, we should be doing the same thing when folks come out with these idiotic statements. And understand also that many of the people that are on the opposite end of the debate that we may find ourselves in, they are just as passionate and just as certain of the correctness of their argument as we are. And so I think it's important that we focus not on getting angry or making it personal, and it does. It gets personal very quickly because everyone's very passionate about it. And so everyone's got their heart on their sleeve, so to speak. And we just have to focus and say, you know, I don't have a problem with everyone in the country having access to health care. In fact, I would challenge you to show me someone who doesn't have access to health care. Because Congress has passed a law couple decades ago,
mm-hmm.
under the Reagan administration, that a hospital could not turn you away for lack insurance, lack of payment. So,
and they sure as heck don't turn away the illegals. I'm here to tell you.
So you got to explain to me if the emergency room at the hospital cannot turn you away, who then is denied access to health care? Again,
as I know, nobody.
Right. Again, as that gentleman stated, that's not health care, that's health insurance is what you're talking about. And why is it we didn't have that debate? Why is it we didn't have that argument that, hey, we're not talking about health care. They're talking about health insurance, which is a product. It's a commercial product.
Well, Ron,
health care is accessible. Now, the argument, yes, Robert.
At least I put up a good fight and I die for my country.
I hate to inform everyone, and Robert, this includes you. Those people that find themselves today without insurance, without health insurance, and without the means or ability to get health insurance, unless I'm mistaken, the law that I was speaking of a moment ago has not been repealed by Congress. The hospital still cannot turn you away for lack of payment
But if they change that law, Ron, then I will die for my country. Really. I fought the fight. I did. I fought just as bad as anybody else did. I fought.
Absolutely, Robert. No one's questioning that. Go ahead,
Linda. When you talk about hospitals, et cetera, and even doctor visits and follow-up care, this is going back a few years in 06, and I had the back surgery while I was in a position of being a bartender at the time. And when you work for restaurants, you don't get health care insurance. You know what I mean? They don't stop for people. This is a part-time situation. You make great money, but you don't get any perks. So once I was in the disabled category and actually got state disability, not federal disability, this is a difference. Then I was eligible for CMS, which is County Medical Services, which ultimately comes from the federal government. Everything that happened to me from that point on when I was approved was paid for. Not one out-of-pocket expense. Now, nobody was paying my rent, but at least I had food and food stamps for a while, and my sister and mom helped me out. But as far as, I had one of the best surgeons in the planet for what I had. So it's not a non-accessible. It's this ridiculousness. And what Mikey B was talking about, he says, if you want to bankrupt this whole thing, just everybody don't buy insurance ever again from these people. Bankrupt the whole damn system.
Well, sure. And, if you go back, the sad thing is if you go back to when this whole debacle really started in earnest,
mm-hmm.
You go back to the end of World War II.
Sure.
And you had a lot of returning vets coming home from the war, and many of them did not have health insurance coverage beyond a certain point. And the tax structure was such at that time, it was exorbitantly high. So Congress basically, through the tax code, made it more attractive for companies to offer benefits that weren't taxed. Like
and wasn't
health
that
insurance
also,
plan.
Yeah, wasn't that like a benefit? It was also at that point, I think, to get people to work for the certain companies. It was to attract more.
Absolutely. See, rather than paying higher wages,
Right.
Which would result in higher incomes, which would result in higher tax revenues. Right? Isn't that what we're always told? But that's not necessarily the way it always works. Companies were encouraged through the government to offer benefits packages, in specifically health insurance. And so there became this competition in the industry. Who could offer the best health insurance coverage?
For the company.
Well,
right.
Right. So, you know, in the beginning, again, it's like any good Ponzi scheme. If you're in on the ground floor, you got a sweet gig. And the insurance companies had a great gig because there weren't that many people that were covered. So the payout, you know, the odds were in their favor. But as it became more and more prevalent, and at one point it just became the norm, if you were looking for a job and they didn't offer health insurance, you just, you know, you'd go down the street and get a job with somebody that did.
Right.
You know what I was thinking?
What that did was drive up the costs associated with seeing your doctor or having any kind of medical procedures done. And it's really a simple mathematical equation. You take patient A, doctor B, and you stick someone in between them who's going to take money from patient A and who's going to agree to pay a portion of that money to Dr. B. When you get that middleman in there, he's got to take his cut to make a profit.
Yep.
I don't have a problem with the insurance guy making a profit. But, you know, you can't, 1 + 1 = 2, 1 + 1 + 1 = 3. So, of course, costs are going to go up because you've added an additional cost.
Another layer. Yeah.
Into the equation. That is the bureaucracy of the insurance company. Now, gradually over time, the insurance company, being unwilling to take on the additional cost themselves of monitoring all of this, they begin placing the obligation on the doctors, the care providers.
Right.
So they spend
the medical
more time
billing,
sitting,
yeah.
Right. They spend more time sitting at their desk at a computer or hiring a staff to do medical billing to make sure every line is filled out precisely the way the insurance company or the government wants it. And so it just adds layer upon layer of costs.
Yes, of crap.
So
it's
the idea,
unnecessary. Yeah.
Right. So the idea that mandating that everyone have this debacle is going to lower cost is a pipe
ludicrous.
Dream. It's fantasy. It's a fairy tale on steroids.
Talk about giant prevarication. Oh, my Lord. Oh. And you know what? I can't even remember the chick's name. I'm sure there were several lately, but there was one Democratic senator or a female who said it on one of the TV stations that everybody in Congress knew that this is not the truth about the keep your plan, keep your doctor. So, I mean,
yes,
way back in 2010.
That.
And I didn't hear what you said because I was in the kitchen, but I was kind of thinking that was the person you might have been speaking of.
Well,
and
I don't remember
the name.
I emailed it to myself earlier today. On Sunday, appearing on ABC's This Week with fill-in host Martha Raddatz, Senator Christine Gillibrand, a Democrat from Yola's home state of New York, admitted that Democrats knew full well that Americans would be booted from their health insurance plans as an effect of Obamacare implementation. When asked whether Democrats were misled by President Obama about whether Americans would be able to keep their plans in the individual insurance market, Gillibrand answered, quote, "He should have just been specific. No. We all knew." End quote.
That was a quote.
And she added that the whole point of Obamacare was to, quote, cover things people need, like preventative care, birth control, pregnancy.
Yeah, but everybody else has to pay for it, too.
Well, Robert, if you were to get pregnant and you didn't have prenatal care in your insurance policy, you'd really be up a creek.
You'd be wealthy as well.
That's just like, Ron, that's just like me paying my property taxes and paying for education. And I don't have kids going to school. And I could just go in there and get in people's faces and say, I don't want to pay for the education anymore.
Now, Robert, listen here. You, as a member of the community, benefit from the education of these poor little darlings.
I didn't say that statement. Tom Harkin did.
They're beneficial to you, Robert. That way, when the little bastards rob you at knife point or gun point, they can do so with proper grammar.
Well, they won't get that in the progressive schools of Common Core, let me tell you. Oh, my Lord. They certainly won't learn curse. Oh, my God.
Oh, I had to throw that
it's
in.
It's pretty bad.
Look, I had
pretty bad. And
fight down.
And Robert, don't forget, if you make statements like that, you just hate children.
No, I don't.
He's racist. He's clearly just talking about black and minority children.
And it's all Bush's fault.
I was just giving everybody the business. That's what I put on the test to do.
Absolutely.
But,
oh, my God.
I got to run into the store, and I'll see you guys late next week.
Okay.
All right.
Talk to you later,
Robert.
God bless.
Be careful. Don't get sick.
Yeah, really.
And I hate to hear that, but I know that there's millions of others out there that are in the same boat. I haven't talked to the owner of the company that I work for yet, but I know that all the guys that I work with, they all got letters.
Oh, wow. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I'm not on that insurance plan. Not that it really matters to me. I mean, it really doesn't.
Right.
It just, honest to goodness, it doesn't.
It's funny because when you're talking about different plans and all this, and who's working for whom and whose employer, whether you're on the wife's plan or whatever, the whole idea is it's like when you explained it in the beginning how they first started this nonsense with this health insurance stuff, it sounds to me like they opened up a casino. I mean, it's when you're talking about the low payouts and the odds are in the favor of the house, pretty much. That's what it sounded like. And that's primarily
it's not that
what
they've opened. They've opened a bank vault, okay?
Yeah.
And the bank vault is your wallet. And this is what, I worked for a guy that, I didn't necessarily, he wasn't the my favorite person in the world, but he wasn't a bad guy. But he said something that I found to be absolutely 100% accurate, and that is people will do what you accept, not what you expect.
Right.
And, I think to your point earlier with Ben Franklin, a republic, madam, if you can keep it. That was Franklin's way of saying the government will do what you accept, not what you expect. It's the same thing. And see, it's by degrees.
Yeah.
Every one of these damnable laws and regulations have started out with the best of justifications. With the, how could you, my God, Linda, how could you deny helping the poor and the children? I mean, that's always the case, though.
Well, that's the mantra. Now, there may be some little dolts out there who actually buy into this stuff and swallow the blue pill, of good intention. And I mean, that may be very true, but I have a feeling that many of them have no good intentions at all for any of us. And anything that, if I hear that term unintended consequences one more time, I swear my head will spin off into space, because I think there are just too many out there who know what they're doing, and it's diabolical, and they don't give a rat's behind. And they've put this in there on purpose. When you look at the entire 2,700 pages of craziness.
I agree.
So, I mean, there's certain folks out there, and, I mean, look, back in the day, and I know this is a harsh comparison, but Dr. Mengele was operating in the beginning under the word compassion for those that were going to be suffering because they were so ill-equipped for life. Okay?
Oh, certainly.
He wound up working at Auschwitz. So don't tell me about, I mean, you know, and if you don't think it can happen here just because we have a different geographical location, man, you're dreaming.
My question is going to be, you know, let's say for the sake of argument that this whole thing got started with the Great Society under Johnson, okay, with the whole welfare rolls. So that was what, 1964, 65?
In the 60s, right.
So let's just say, you know, 65 for the sake of argument.
Okay.
So, you know, if you've got 1965 plus, well, in all honesty, we only had slavery about the first, what, 150 years in this country? Was it even that?
Right.
No, it wasn't even that. But we'll, so in the year 2115, can we say, okay, that's it. We're all square now. And can release my children, my grandchildren from bondage. And now that we're all equal, we enslaved you for a while. Now you've enslaved us for an equal amount of time. Time out. We're going to reset. Everybody go to their neutral corners and let's have a society. I mean, because really that's the way I'm being mm-hmm. made to feel. And that's just my personal
sure.
opinion. That, you know, this is our recompense, our retribution for the sins of our fathers. Now, you know, the Bible says to the third generation, but this has certainly gone
right.
on a lot longer than that.
True.
Well, I don't know. The three generations would be 120 years. So, that's...
If you... But, I mean, I know Johnson did a lot of damage, but you can go backwards and forwards with that time thing because Carter did a lot of damage. I know Nixon did with the HMOs. Let's not forget him. Like
oh,
you
God,
had mentioned on one of your shows, and also we'll go back to Wilson and Teddy and all and those guys. When in fact, when we had the Wilson and Colonel House was whispering in his ear about social insurance, and he says we get that little scheme going and we'll have them by the clutches for good. I mean, forever. I mean, and then it came to fruition under Wilson, didn't it? Was it Wilson that had the Social Security? Finally got the Social Security. He didn't get the UN till.
Social Security went in under that bastard FDR.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's right.
During the Great Depression.
Well, not too much farther after Wilson in that time period. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't like, you know, in the 70s or something.
That,
it was way back
whole,
there. And then we had the full-blown Medicare under Johnson, plus the other stuff. And then we had Carter with the HUD and the EPA and, oh, my God, and the SLBs, as you know how I say, because I hate them. And by what authority? You're correct. And we're sick of it. I mean, the most mercantilist one, as you know and you said, was Alexander Hamilton. But in the Federalist Papers, he was adamant that if it's unconstitutional, it's automatically null and void. It's not a law. You don't have to follow it. And if people would just wake up and stand up and say no, like the Sacketts did against the EPA, wherever, I think it was Idaho, and they actually won in the Supreme Court, round one anyway, you just have to say no.
Well,
on all,
you know,
all of it.
I think, unfortunately for me, Hamilton gets failing grades. And I say that
I know.
Yes, I know what he said in the Federalist Papers. I know all too well. But when I hear about Hamilton and his mm-hmm. responses in the Federalist, what I envision is Barack Obama saying, look, if you like your health care plan, you can keep your health care plan. Because that's exactly what Hamilton was doing. And I'm telling you,
right.
If you guys have not, and I swear, please go to MikeChurch.com and get The Spirit of 76. It's like $20. It's a 3 or 4 CD set. It is the entire Constitutional Convention on CD reenacted from the minutes of the convention, along with all the side stories that were going on that if you were to even read the minutes of the convention, you would not get the full grasp, the full picture of what was going on. And I'm telling you, when you sit and listen to that constitutional convention in real time, as if you were sitting in the room, hearing these debates go back and forth, there is a moment in time that is palpable. You can cut it with a knife when Hamilton, his light bulb goes off, and he stops fighting against what they're doing because he recognizes, this will work.
Yeah, I get you. Okay.
He recognizes that the system they're amenable to, this will work. We can accomplish the goal
of
mercantilism. We can accomplish our agenda within this framework. This will work.
Could he? Okay, but didn't he?
So his little light bulb goes ding.
Right, but I'm saying I understand the framework, but would he not have had to add the Federal Reserve and the dishonest monetary system to go about doing that? I mean, was that...
He did. He absolutely did. Look, you've got to know who Hamilton was, what his influence was with Biddle, what his influence was with the guy that ran the first Bank of the United States, and who was it that argued before the very group of men that they just argued the Constitution in the convention, and Hamilton, as the first Treasury Secretary, makes an argument to Congress and to the President that it is perfectly constitutional for them to set up this national bank.
Wow.
And he got them to agree. He convinced them that it was true, and it was not true. It couldn't be further from the truth.
Right. Absolutely. Well,
but he knew. He knew, and he was just... He was telling people what they wanted to flip and hear.
Right, right, and he was salivating, exactly. Yeah, oh, sure.
When he was asked about the federal government taking a state before the Supreme Court, his answer was that there was nothing in the Constitution that would authorize that, and he could not envision a circumstance where the federal government would ever take one of the states to court, for God's sakes. He said it's not even possible. It's not even possible.
Wow. And look where we've fallen. Oy.
He knew damn good and well.
Sure.
That he was full of crap.
They'll,
he knew what his agenda was.
Yeah, they'll
was
do and say anything to get their, very shrewd.
Yeah, he was very shrewd.
It's bad because I know that James Madison was really, really adamant about securing individual property rights, not just, the 10th Amendment and the states' rights, but absolute sovereign individual property. He was, and he had quite a thesis on it. A lot of it can be boiled down to like a page and three quarters, and I think I read it a few weeks ago on my show. And then we had Jefferson, who was completely against the Bank of the U.S. and the central banking policies. He hated that idea. He said, every time, I think there were several in Jekyll Island I was reading just recently, like paragraph after paragraph on him at different occasions how he hated that idea and thought it was, the demise of freedom. So there were good people at these conventions in the beginning, and it's just sad that you a couple of bad apples, and then they, like Franklin said, and nobody figured it out, and they just forgot to pounce on them and stay on it vigilantly forever and say, no, you can't do that, en masse. And had we done that, maybe we wouldn't be in this mess.
Well, and you look at somebody like an Adams or a Washington or a Hamilton who were Federalists, and look at the Alien and Sedition Acts. I mean, are you kidding me? And the whole, not the whole purpose, but one of the main driving forces behind the implementation of the Alien and Sedition Act was the fear that, you know, geez, the people might set up guillotines for us right out here in Philadelphia, you know, if we don't pass something to because they recognized that in that Constitution that they had ratified, they left an opening that the people could, by God, come and revolt against them. That was not good. The odds of that happening today are much smaller. You know, at that time, the military was the militia. It was state-run.
Exactly. Well, they boxed us into a, or we've allowed them to box us into a corner that it's going to be damn hard to get out of. I mean, let's look at this realistically. And that was a couple of points on Mikey's show on Saturday where everybody's arguing about, well, we got to have an arm this, and no, we don't, and just stop funding it. I mean, believe me, we've got division amongst the patriots. So, and I can testify because, I mean, I know people, and I won't say who and what states they're in, but they're crazy. They want to go, you know, storm the Bastille.
Oh, trust me. I know there. Look, there are plenty of folks. I know a bunch of them that, you know, and I'm sorry, but that's just little-minded.
It is.
You know, and I think these guys, I think a lot of these guys, you know, they've seen war movies on TV, and it's glorified, of course, on television. It always is glorified. So they think they're going to go out and, you know, play, you know, Hell's Angels and Rambo, and that's just not the way it is. And you can ask anyone that's been in actual combat, you know, Mr. Bill Strong in our chat room there, he'll tell you that's really not the way it works, guys. And those bullets really hurt, and a lot of times they kill people. And quite honestly, you know, picking up arms is the last damn thing that we need.
You want to do.
That would be an act of violence against the government that we are disagreeing with because the government is using violence to force us to do things against our will. The simple solution is just not to participate. Do not consent.
Oh.
Refuse.
Exactly.
Like,
I know.
Burgess Meredith in that clip, you know. I am a librarian.
Yes.
And you can kill me. I know why I'm here. You know, I mean, read between the lines. Tell them I know why I'm here. You say I'm obsolete, which means you're going to kill me. That's fine. It doesn't change the facts. And I'm a reminder of, I remind you of that, and it infuriates you. And the fact is that I'm a human being, and I have a free will, and you can't force me to do it. You can try, but in the end, the only true force that you can use is to either throw me in prison or kill me.
Exactly.
That's how Gandhi won. That's how he defeated the Brits.
Yep. Well, I mean, no, that's true because, you know, they have that option to put someone in prison or to kill them, and that's as far as it goes because they are not God. So, and boy, they'll find out that someday.
And the very moment you take the moment you take up arms, well, now you're a terrorist.
Well, yeah. I mean, well, they'll call you that even if you just look sideways at a damn liberal, you know.
Well, and you look at what has transpired with our police department. And,
oh my
you know,
God!
Look, I don't have any. I guess, golly, sometimes my brain just stops in mid-sentence, and I hate that. I hate it. But I don't have any discriminatory views towards police. There are one or two good ones out there, I'm sure.
I hope there's
but
a lot more than one or two.
Most of the ones that I have dealt with are on a power trip. And they are going to make you comply. It does not matter if the law says what they think it says or not. None of that means crap.
So do you believe that in recent decades that they have been emboldened by this nonsense of this, quote, militarizing of the police? Because when I was growing up, they didn't act like this. I think they had a lot of that transition in the late 60s when there were, you know, crazy demonstrations, and they were using riot gear, whether it was on college campuses or whether it was in Watts or whether it was in Detroit. I think that that was one of our defining moments when they were starting to act like they needed to be this militant. And it's just gotten worse. It's just a slippery slope, and they've just slid all the way down. And
I don't necessarily agree that it's gotten worse. What I think is it's gotten easier. Easier for the men with Napoleon complex to get into the police department and get on a power trip. I mean, you go back and read the history of the early to mid 17 or, you know, late 1700s, early 1800s in New York.
Mm-hmm.
The cops were freaking horrible, and they were corrupt as anything. And they would go around smacking people in the head with their little billy clubs, and they were horribly racist towards the Irish and the Italians.
Was that during the Boss Tweed time?
Oh, God, yeah, and beyond.
Okay.
There's always been corruption in government,
sure,
no matter what level of power structure it is. But the police in particular, they are the enforcement arm. They are the blunt instrument of government force. They are at the tip of the spear, so to speak. And, you know, the militarization of our police forces is just a natural progression,
mm-hmm,
I think. You know, we've exchanged billy clubs for M16s and MRAP, you know, up-armored vehicles, for God's sakes.
Yeah, instead
it's
of just normal police cars.
Right.
It's horrible.
It's a natural progression. And these cops try to justify it and say, well, we use these to serve warrants. Horse crap.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, lie.
I know.
I know.
I think it was, probably, I know that 2 or 3 years ago, several groups of us went. I think there was about 350 people in this room. We carpooled up to Orange County to the Oath Keepers rally and special meeting, and there Sheriff Mack was there, Sheriff Lopey was there, and there were several of them, and there were just ex-military guys, people in the military, policemen and sheriffs all over the place, and they had their Oath Keeper hats. They talked about what their Ten Commandments in their little group was, what they would not do, would not fire upon civilians, you know, in peacetime on American soil. I mean, it was amazing, and it grew exponentially because in the beginning, Sheriff Mack only had about 100 people, and now he's got over 500, and that was like within 2 to 3 years. So this is growing
absolutely
movement.
Absolutely.
And that's
but,
what
you
need.
You see these guys in Texas, okay?
Okay.
And, you know, the folks are down at the state capitol, and the one guy got arrested. He was carrying a freaking cap gun.
Oh, my God.
They arrested him, took his gun belt from him and everything, you know. And granted, he was making a point, and a damn good one, okay? The law in Texas says, you know, firearm, but the antique pistols, cap and ball, black powder, are not classified as a firearm. They were arresting people for carrying, you know, old pistols, black powder pistols.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
They were exercising their rights, and they were incarcerated for it. They were absolutely incarcerated for it. And it's just ridiculous. There's no purpose for it except to teach the people that no form of civil disobedience is going to be accepted. Don't think that you can thumb your nose at us. We will put your ass in jail.
Well, here's the thing. Now California is pretty much doomed because we don't have, especially here in San Diego, and I don't know what's going on up north of me, but...
I don't know how in the hell that one guy smuggled that gun into the airport. how in the hell he got it into the state of California.
Precisely. Yeah, to me that was another little false flag. I don't know what went on there. But as far as we don't have the constitutional sheriffs that we should have, the Oath Keeper type sheriffs. Now, because if you have your own jurisdiction, that is an elected person, he is supposed to protect those people in his district. Where
well,
he was,
that's really not accurate. And I don't know what the sheriff's oath is, and I'm sure it's different in each and every county. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, according to the Supreme Court, that police are not there to protect you. And that's wholly true.
I think what the oath keepers were trying to say is they were protecting their citizens from federal intrusion where they have no jurisdiction. If he wants to get his deputized posse together, he can arrest the damn bastard.
They're supposed to uphold the law, period.
Right.
And jurisdiction is jurisdiction. And it doesn't matter if you're a senator or a congressman or the by God president himself, your jurisdiction is limited, sir.
I believe so.
Yes, absolutely.
That's good because you're correct about the legal terms and talking about jurisdiction. And remember that Jan Brewer case when you talked about that, and it just infuriated you, and I understand why once I started learning about all this stuff. And that's what I'm saying. I'm hoping that these groups will grow exponentially and understand their place and understand what sovereign individual rights and, you know, unalienable rights are, and let's start protecting them. Let's go up against this beast and say, no, we're not doing this. You know, because there's a lot of groups who are doing it.
And see, that's the thing that I don't think the majority of people grasp, and I know that our government certainly doesn't grasp it, or if they do, they would deny it until their grave. And that is the fact that the sovereignty of the state is merely an extension of the sovereignty of the people that comprise the geographical area that is the state, like Georgia.
Sure.
Okay. The people that occupy the geographical area known as Georgia, we extend our sovereignty to the state for specific and limited purposes.
Right. And the
in
same
turn,
way
the
with
states,
the 50 states.
Right.
Right.
In turn, the states extended a small portion of their sovereignty to the federal government for specific enumerated purposes. And somehow we have allowed this to all get turned around to where we are the citizens. We're no longer the capital C citizens. We are the little c citizens.
It sucks.
And that's why I told you, if you look in your pocket constitution, and I would encourage everyone, look in your pocket constitution. And what I want you to do is I want you to look through the entire document up to the Bill of Rights. And I want you to notate every time you see the word citizen used and make a mental note of whether or not it is a capital C or a lowercase c.
Right.
Then I want you to go to the 14th Amendment and read citizen in the 14th Amendment. And then begin to try and figure out why all the occurrences are uppercase, capital C, when citizens are mentioned, until we get to that 14th Amendment. And then it's lowercase c, and every occurrence after that is lowercase c. Now, that may sound like something that's just silly, but it's not.
But it means something.
The Constitution and every amendment to it is a legal document. It is a contract of some sort.
Right.
Construct. It's a constitution. It carries the full force and effect of law. When something is done that is what is called conspicuous, meaning it stands out from the rest of the document, that is something that you should take notice of because it has meaning.
Right.
And there is a meaning to why there's a big C citizen and a little C citizen. And it goes back to the blog post I put up about Rousseau.
Right.
And if it were possible to transform a human being into a citizen, little C citizen, or
sure,
make-believe person, it's crazy what we have allowed.
Right. And so what we have allowed them to do is turn us not only from the big capital C to the little C to a capital S stands for serfs. And boy, we're in serfdom. Oh,
we
my
have
God.
We have absolutely, by acquiescence, surrendered our rights. We've surrendered our sovereignty.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I get brownie points because that is one of the buzzwords, keywords, along with, of course, you know, the ubiquitous pressure cooker, jihad, bomb backpack, and some of the others.
Yeah, launch codes.
Yeah, I mean, for crying out loud.
I know. I'm on everybody's list. Well, you know, there was a, I think that, God, I can't remember if it was a T-shirt or just a post on the Facebook, and it said, regarding the NSA and the NDAA and the rest of it, it said, if you're not on one of the government's watch lists by now, you should be ashamed of yourself. I thought that
was you're not doing it right.
It is a shame. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, so I was going to ask you, with all those incredible pictures that I did see, I can imagine the scenery was gorgeous. What states were you in?
North Carolina.
Oh, cool. Nice.
Just western North Carolina. That's there's a parkway. It's the Blue Ridge Parkway.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
That was actually put in under FDR. It was one of his make-work projects.
Oh, God.
And it stretches from Virginia down through the Shenandoah Valley in Virginia into North Carolina, and it ends in North Carolina. And Tennessee and Kentucky and a couple other states were pretty miffed that it didn't grace their doorstep.
Right.
A lot of people were displaced from their homes and their family farms.
Oh my gosh.
To manufacture that roadway.
Wow.
Which is truly terrible. And you know, that was another thing, and my wife and I were driving around up there in the hill country in western North Carolina, and you know, I just think back on those justifications. You know, look at these poor people and how they, oh, they're just in abject poverty. Look, they don't have a power bill. They don't have a sewer bill. They don't have a water bill. They don't even have an automobile. My God, they don't have electricity. They don't have a power bill. We've got to do something about that. We've got to help these people. What in God's name makes you think those people wanted your help or what you called help in the first place?
Right.
Because many of them, what you did is you took them out of their natural environment where their families had been for generations, and you put them in a frickin' city in an apartment building with all the accoutrements, all the comforts of modern conveniences, and saddled them with debt and work that they had to do to pay their bills instead of work that they did to feed their family and to provide for their family. They still did that, but they had a lot of other things on top of that. Now, were they really better off? I know a lot of them resented that. I know a lot of people actually committed suicide over it.
Oh, my God.
It's just terrible. You know, we think we're going to improve the life of someone. We look at them and we think, oh, how sad, how terrible. And,
you know,
we don't have a clue. We're not living with them. You know, for us, because we're so accustomed to all the accoutrements of the city, you know what? You can have all that crap. I would love to be able to go back to being a subsistence farmer, take my family with me, and, you know, to hell with all this garbage.
Oh, I know. I mean, it's absolutely. When you talk about especially the government or even, you know, a group of people, whomever they are, What it amounts to is busybodiness. It's like, leave people alone. Can we just be left alone? Dang.
Right. And the other thing, you know, is, oh, well, they're too proud to ask for help. By God,
right.
if they wanted help, you know, they're fully capable of asking. If
of course
you feel
they would.
If you feel the need to be charitable, they might accept your charity, probably would graciously, so as not to offend.
Right.
I mean, you know, this whole idea. I don't mind everyone having a great life. I would hope that for everyone alive today. But I don't believe that you can justify giving everyone a little slice of the pie by robbing it from their neighbor.
From everyone.
Where does this authority come from?
It doesn't.
Your neighbor's got 100 acres and you've got 20. And where does the authority come from for a third-party government to come in and rob you?
Redistribute.
Or your neighbor and give you half of their property so that you both have equal acreage. You know,
well,
you both got 60 acres now.
Definitely Marxism, because I do believe he professed redistribution for equalness and equal outcomes is what they're doing. And there is no equal outcome. That was not part of the deal. And it's not part of the Bible. And it's not part of the Constitution or the original intent of it anyway.
Well, it's not part of humanity and human nature to begin with.
Right.
It's impossible.
Exactly. And this is why the progressives are going to fail, and that's why people are now standing up en masse against Common Core, because they want the cookie-cutter stuff. Once everybody finds out what's in it, you know, as good old Pelosi said, you got to pass it to see what's in it. Now we've seen it, Miss, you know, F. Sandwich lady, we don't want it. You know, same with Common Core, we don't want it. You know, they will shove stuff down people's throats in a very fascistic manner. This is why we're rebelling. I mean, you just can't do it.
Absolutely. And you know, Bill said, you know, I notice it's always a share the wealth ideology but never share the work. Well, that's true to a point. I mean, you know, And it's always share the wealth as long as it's someone else's, not your own. The guy and the woman from Washington State who were, you know, well, we voted for this and we thought it was great. I just didn't know I was going to be paying for it. Well, welcome to the real world, sunshine.
Welcome to the real world. And when you talk about charitable giving and redistributing, just ask the cheapskate Democrats like Joe Biden and the rest of them, stingy little fuck.
To me, the one saving grace in all of this garbage is that many of the folks on the progressive ideology slant of things are waking up to the realization that, hey, wait a damn minute.
Yep.
Now,
yep,
wait just a minute. Hold on. It's knocking on their doorstep now.
Sure.
And suddenly it's a whole lot more personal. And, you know.
Yeah, and you know.
That old adage,
I'm glad,
give them enough rope, they'll hang themselves.
Exactly. And what's happening, and I'm glad it's happening, because I don't want it to get to the point where they're, you know, serving warrants on people with their MRAPs to come in and tell you because you're one of the ones of the subsidies, you know, what goes in your kids' mouths out of your refrigerator type crap, and how many times, you know, you're going to be forced to do this, that, and the other thing. Healthcare-wise, because then you're going to, otherwise you'll be a burden on society. I don't want it to even get near that mess, and that's where this thing's headed. I want
this
to go away fast.
Well, that's like Robert talking about going on disability. I don't know why he doesn't. I mean, you know, with his health concerns, he should.
Right.
I have a technician that works for me, and, you know, my store manager and I were talking today, and he's a good guy, but he's got a lot of health issues. He shot his hand couple years ago, so he's missing, much like my son, he's missing a middle finger, but his gun malfunctioned, and it's a long story, it went full auto, and he got shot 3 times at his left hand.
It
just blew the snot out of his hand. He's had an artery replaced in his left leg twice now. His heart's not good, and he's he's younger than I am. I'm the oldest guy in the shop.
Oh, my God.
And he's limping around there, and his head hurts, and his neck hurts, and his... I'm like, why doesn't he just go on disability? I mean, I understand why he doesn't.
Yeah.
I understand, but, you know, it's that pride thing. I get that.
Sure.
But at the same time, you know what? Man, you worked your whole life paying for it. Okay? So now I'm going to get some of the entitlement mentality.
Right.
By God, it's there. You paid for it. Utilize it.
Instead
of people that haven't paid for it utilizing it.
Sure. Yeah, you're different when you've got the folks who literally grow up under generation upon generation who expect the dole out. And
yeah, generational welfare.
Yeah, they're going to continue to sit on the couch and watch their flat-screen TVs and drink their soda and their beer and have their pot or whatever. And they're going to pop out children because they're being paid to, literally paid to by you and me, or whoever's still. Thank God I don't even file anymore. I don't pay taxes. They can pound it. I'm not participating in a lot of things, believe me. And if they raise my premiums, I'll cancel my damn Medicare, and they can pound that too. So I'm done. I'm with you. I'm going to go. You know, one of these days it'll be Indiana. I'll be in the hill. They ain't finding me. I don't care. Screw them. I'm not doing it. I'm unplugging.
I mean,
no more Matrix.
You know, I was watching a show the other night, Buying Alaska. And there are large counties in Alaska where there are no property taxes and no building permits or anything required. So
I know.
Your property is truly your freaking property.
You know,
and
that's the last frontier.
She looked at me. She looked at me sideways. She said, "It gets cold up there."
Oh, it gets so, dude, it gets cold in North Dakota, and that's far enough north for me. I mean, wow, I wouldn't even venture that. So, no, I know, Alaska's ridiculous. My body wouldn't take that. There's no way. No.
Yeah, I meant to ask about that, Bill. I didn't even think about it being down south of you guys. I didn't even think that the tornadoes would have come that far down. My folks live up in St. Joe, Illinois. And they own a duplex in Gifford, Illinois. Gifford, Illinois got flattened. Their duplex is one of the few houses still standing.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, wow.
They rented out, you know. I mean, they're not living there or anything, but terrible, terrible tornadoes.
Oh, my gosh.
I think people don't really realize that, you know, Indiana, Ohio,
yep.
Illinois, man,
oh,
they
sure.
get hammered with tornadoes.
They do get hammered. Yeah, because I asked Lonnie earlier today, Bill's cousin, you know, because he was on Facebook, and I said, "Did you guys get hit with the bad weather?" And he says, "No." He says, "Other parts did, but we, you know, Brownstown might have got a little bit, but so I don't know. I'd have to ask Bill because I think his daughter lives in Brownstown because I know those they're all pretty close to Delaney down there.
Yep.
So, but
well,
yeah,
I'm hoping he's got a line on that 40 acres down there. We just.
Oh, man.
Start building the compound.
I'm ready. I am so ready. Believe me. Just make sure it's camouflaged. Not like the one that David Koresh had that was like damn close to white or pink.
Oh, man. Don't even get me started on the Branch Davidians and going on there. That was another freaking BS deal.
That's pretty crazy, yeah. Well, that too, but... I don't think that they needed to go in there and kamikaze them. That was not right.
No, and I forget the whole situation there, but he was – they had some kind of contract for automatic weapons for, like, linking up ammo for ammo belts
wow.
or something. I don't remember what it was. But, I mean, you know, it wasn't like he didn't have any dealing with the – Wow, Sandy, where are you at? We're all moving to Sandy's.
Where's she?
I don't know, but she said she's got 70 acres and no building permits. I'm there.
Ooh, that sounds good. I'm going to let you wrap this up, and I'm going to go inside because it's easier for me to get a signal. Now I'm talking about cold weather. It's getting cold for us. When it gets to 40, it makes me crazy. I know I'm a wuss.
no worries, huh? I appreciate you calling in. I appreciate Robert calling
Thanks.
In, too. God bless you
okay,
guys.
Okay, guys. See you guys tomorrow night, and I'm going to go to the chat room. Thank you.
All
right.
Thanks. Always good to have Miss Linda call in and Mr. Robert. And, you know, Sandy, Bill, you said Ohio. My good part of my family is from Ohio. The Goldens came down through Ohio, and there's actually some buried in two cemeteries pretty close to Delaney out there on the way out to the park. We stopped and took some photographs of the gravestones, but hang in there, guys. It's going to get a lot rockier before it gets better, I'm afraid. And the wheels are definitely coming off the proverbial wagon. But it'll turn around eventually. We hope that things are going to fall apart soon. But we've got to stay vigilant, and I think we have to ratchet up pressure. And really, the key is to educate people. You know, my audience here, I'm preaching to the choir. We need to be preaching to those who haven't been saved yet. Those who are still being deceived. Those who are being led astray. Those are the ones we should be preaching to. It's education. It's about educating people, not bludgeoning them with your argument, but educating them. And that's where I think we get a lot further with calm, rational discussion than the impassioned argument.
That's true, Bill. The healthy don't need a physician. And, you know, rather than paying for a, rather than paying for an insurance company to give you 70% of what you're paying for minus your deductible, why not set that money aside every month in a safe place? And save money for when you need it. For when you need to see the doctor. And when you're dealing with cash, it's much easier to negotiate than when you're at the mercy of some bureaucrat. And the doctor is just as trapped in the middle as you and I are as well. And on that note, we're going to play a little song, and we'll see you guys tomorrow. God bless.
Smile from my face, losing soul.